WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into draft weekend around here. And do a Maryland crab cake tour. I had my first crab cake of the weekend on Thursday at Captain Larry's down in Federal Hill. It was fantastic. Great guests down there. Shannon Toback, local realtor, and my dear friend, formerly of the Rusty Scupper many, many years ago, and my in-studio flirtatious visitor from 20 years ago, back to talk about her trip to Patagonia. Also, my friend Todd Schuller talking Derby hopefuls all week from Blondell Miller Schuller, as well as Chris Reel, who does Baltimore tours better than anybody. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got instant lottery scratch-offs. We did have some winners down at Captain Larry's. Going to be at Fadley's on Friday, and then next Thursday at McFall's Oyster and Reel to start the month of May. We're going to be in Middle River. We'll have some great guests for that as well. Luke Jones joins us now. Luke, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've been in Maui for like 10, 11 days and sort of flew back. Did I miss anything when I got back on Thursday?
You missed a little bit. And I mean, we talked about Lamar Jackson. We've talked about Zay Flowers. How about the Orioles? 17-8 and they third best, third best record in the majors. And I mean, there's a lot of good stuff happening on the local sports front. There's no question.
15
about
years
it.
You've been at this with me. I mean, it's hard to imagine, but it's been 15 years for you and I. This week and this month with Ravens news, the draft, the Lamar-a-thon that's now like ended. The Lamar-a-thon, I gave it a name, you know. But the Orioles being relevant right now, and, you know, no offense to the Capitals or the Wizards or the Bullets or playoff times or lacrosse fans or even Preakness and Derby fans, because it's all of that. But just from your perspective, as active as we've been around here, this has been a really active couple of weeks for you personally, being at the ballpark. The teams don't let me actually be a reporter. They discriminate against me, but they let you go. But you've been working a lot, and there have been double duties. There have been press conferences during games. It's been a really, really active couple weeks while I was out sunning myself.
It's fun, right? I mean, yeah, busy, but good busy. And I think in the case of the Orioles, they had some really good years under Buck Showalter, but with this on the back end of just awful, exhausting rebuild baseball, where you're talking about 110 plus loss seasons, for them to now be in this position and look, do I think they're going to continue to play 680 baseball and win 110 games? No, I don't think that. But what we're seeing now, and we've talked about it, and we'll continue to talk about it as they're playing the Detroit Tigers over the weekend, it's that soft underbelly of the schedule on paper. And what have they done with that? They've taken advantage of it. They're winning series. They're winning series openers, which makes it that much easier to win series when you take game one. And they're beating teams that they're supposed to beat. Now, does that mean it's going to continue when they start playing, you know, Atlanta here soon and Tampa Bay? Who, I mean, the Rays, they're not quite the 84 Tigers, but they're doing a decent impression of them with what they've been able to do to this point, winning 80% of their games. But when you get to those tougher opponents, can you hold your own? If you do that and you beat up on the teams that you should beat up on, boy, that's going to add up to a lot of wins, and that's going to keep you firmly in the playoff mix. And that's going to lead to a very relevant, compelling, exciting baseball season. And that's what we've seen in April. There's a long way to go. There are very fair questions about this team that I still have on the pitching side, and more specifically the starting pitching, but we've seen it look better over the last couple of weeks. I made mention when you and I talked several days ago that even Oakland hung some crooked numbers on them a couple of weeks ago on the pitching side. So that's where it has been encouraging. And, you know, take draft night. I mean, a lot of people were focused on what the Ravens were doing and basking in the Lamar contract extension and all that. Yeah, the Orioles looked like they were on their way to maybe losing a series opener for the first time all year. And they battle back. And what do you know? Joey Ortiz in his major league debut knocks in a few runs for them. I mean, it's just...
In Captain Larry's on Thursday, okay? And I'm doing the show, and some fans came from the neighborhood and hung out. And on a day when the Ravens are drafting, when Lamar Jackson is in the midst of the biggest Lamar-a-thon there is, I had people at the bar asking me about Adam Frazier. Like, you know what I mean? And I actually thought they were talking about Lyles and Gibson and started talking pitching, because to me, pitching's the question. People are talking about the second baseman getting at bats and it blocking players. And, you know, when I was out with Mike Elias 2 weeks ago at a press conference, people are asking about, like, an outfielder that's getting shuttled back and forth to Norfolk. Like, the fact that we're talking about things like that on the baseball team, really, people are talking about baseball. And I felt that when I was away. I felt that on my timeline. I know you and I talked about the kids going out on Sunday and running the bases, something you and I didn't get a chance to do because of the arrogance of the organization during our they are changing some things, including winning. Winning is the first thing. They've changed that to some degree. We'll see how that plays out, but that's not going to be enough to bring people back. I think to pack the stadium, I think there's this conversation where they get in your DNA every day, like they were for your dad and my dad and for both of us as kids, where that's hard to do when you lose 100 games for a decade or two or three, right? A lot. You lose a lot and there's no hope. And the conversation around Adam Frey, I found that to be amazing. I'm like, nobody's talked to me about some eighth hitting second baseman around here in a long, long time.
Yeah, I think, you just said it. It's the nuts and bolts that are starting to attract more and more viewers, more and more fans, more and more people that are engaged with the product. It doesn't mean you're necessarily watching every single night, but I've used this, and look, this is not an exact science whatsoever, but I've mentioned this before and I'll mention it again, Nestor. I have a text chain with some of my very best friends from high school. I mean, I've been out of high school now 20 plus years, so we go back a long ways. And of that group, and it's about 10 of us, there's only two other guys in that group who are really consider themselves legitimate, serious baseball fans. What I've noticed, and this started second half of last year and really has picked up here over the course of April, the Orioles game is being mentioned on a nightly basis in our little text thread where it's being mentioned, and even by a few of my friends who are much more casual baseball fans. So, look, that's just my world, right?
That's my world as well. It's one thing for my world, the people that follow baseball every day when they sucked and they were terrible, but people are coming back and peeking in now. My wife and I are, right? Like, so. And what's under the hood is, that this is their chance to do something new. And I've talked about that a lot. I'll continue to talk about that because this is their challenge, not my challenge. This is they have to be a relevant franchise again for the city and for making people come back. They have to they have to have good television broadcasts, which they haven't had in years, which Ben McDonald has certainly made better. There needs to be some there. And there is when you start the season 17-8.
No question. And we talked about this. I vividly remember us talking about this the few days before the season opened up at Fenway. At that point in time, Lamar Jackson still wanted to be traded, right? Who knew what was going to happen? Were they going to trade him? Was he just going to play on the tag on another kind of lame duck, black cloud hanging over the team kind of season? And I said at that point in time, this is an opportunity for the Orioles to not overtake the NFL, because the NFL is king in every single market that it exists. Even in markets where it doesn't exist, the NFL is still king as it pertains to American sports. But I thought it was a great opportunity for the Orioles if they could get off to, and I think I even said a 14-7 start, which, pretty close, when you kind of look at where they are right now. I said, this is an opportunity for them to create some buzz for themselves, generate some interest for themselves. And now, okay, the people are jazzed up on the Ravens right now, and they're excited, as they should be. Lamar's under contract, not going anywhere. They just drafted Zay Flowers. They'll add some more players over the course of the weekend, and we'll be talking about them plenty. But the Ravens still don't play another game then for 4+ months in terms of a game that actually matters, not talking fake football in August. So the fact that the Orioles have gotten off to this good start on the heels of what was a very surprising 2022, they have carved out some interest for themselves. Now, to your point, there's a long way to go on the field and also off the field in terms of what needs to happen for baseball and the Orioles in Baltimore to thrive and be healthy and to grow from a long-term standpoint. There's a lot involved with that, and we've talked about it, and we'll continue to talk about that. But what they're doing in the present is they're certainly helping themselves by playing well, getting off to a good start, getting people excited, getting more people to tune in and watch the game or listen to the game if they're out. And it's been fun. And you have this group of young players that I can tell you, Nestor, these guys are fun. And you know, we talked about it with the Homer Hose or the Dong Bong or whatever, however, you know, whatever people want to describe it as. But that right there is a reflection of, you have guys that are having fun, right? And what's the easiest way to have fun playing baseball, especially when you're talking about adults? You know, I understand Little League, you know, just the love of the game and everything. Win, right? Winning cultivates that kind of atmosphere. But you have these young guys that grew up together in the minors, and now they're coming together at the major league level, and they're having success. And I think the longer that goes on, and we saw this last year, you know, with they had the 10-game winning streak at the start of the summer, and we saw how that really, you know, that was able to spring. Yeah, you know, they were able to use that as a catapult to hang in contention all year. So,
well, it's changed the franchise.
I think you get off to this kind of start.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you get off to this kind of start, and now it's Adley Rutschman, first full year, and all some of these other guys, first full year. And, you know, a guy like Cedric Mullins or Ryan Mountcastle, guys that have been around a few years now. So that's all coming together. Meanwhile, you add more. You know, we talked about this with Grayson Rodriguez a couple weeks ago. Joey Ortiz, who I'm not sure is necessarily going to be here long term in terms of that he's here to stay, but got off to a great start in Detroit on Thursday night, you know, driving in a few runs. But that's what's exciting. And to go back to your Adam Frazier point, there's more talent on the way. You know, they have Jordan Westberg, and I mean, Jackson Holliday just got promoted to Aberdeen, and he's homering and tripling at Aberdeen, and kid's 19 years old. I mean,
and he's the only younger Jackson at this point. He's not even the real Jackson.
Right. But Jackson Holliday might be in the majors by the end of next year, the way that he's going. I'm not saying that's definite, but the point is, what we're seeing at the major league level is compelling. It's better. They're winning games more consistently. Yeah, they still have a ways to go, and I'm still not ready to put them into an elite, serious World Series contender kind of category. I need to see them do more than beat the Detroit Tigers and teams like that until we start talking about that. But the point is, they're on their way, and that's all you can ask for at this point in time after seeing, especially the last 4 years, just how brutal it was to watch on a nightly basis. I mean, even if you were trying to stay engaged, knowing that they weren't trying to win at the major league level, it was a tough watch, man. I mean, we talked about it over and over. The number of times I'd be at the ballpark, and look, I love baseball, and it's my livelihood, and I am blessed to have the kind of opportunity to do what I do. But the number of nights I'd sit at the ballpark and say, boy, these 3 hours of my life, I'm not getting back, because, you know, they're down 10-0 in the second inning. You know, you're seeing now them be on the other side of that, and this being an ascending team, and it's exciting. And look, it's not a Ravens or an Orioles thing. There's always been room for plenty of enthusiasm to go around, but the Orioles, more often than not, haven't held up their end of the bargain in that regard. So for them to get off to this start, especially with there being so much angst until the last couple days with the Ravens, I think it really, you know, it puts them in a position to get a little more support. And yeah, they're not going to sell out every night. We know that's not going to happen. They're still going to have those lean weeknight type gates, but with a better product and continuing to do promos and giveaways and bobbleheads and different things like that, yeah, I think there's a path here for them to become more vibrant again and more, you know, a more viable type of long-term entity compared to what we've seen here for, frankly, for a very long time. So it's exciting. They're fun to watch, and they're winning games. And for where they are right now, where they've been the last 4 or 5 years, it's a pretty good place to be, and certainly an exciting place to be if you're a fan.
Well, certainly for anybody tuning in and saying, hey, it's NFL draft weekend, man. Why are you guys talking about the Orioles? Well, they're good. So this is a problem we have not had here, right? The mixing and mingling of baseball and football together on a draft weekend. But let's get back to the draft for a minute here. We have plenty of baseball and the Rodriguezes and all that stuff going on over the weekend. The draft itself, at the top of the draft and the quarterbacks and what happened, so much of the Lamar story was whether Carolina wanted him, or whether the Colts wanted him, or whether the command who wanted him was the Buccaneers, or these places where he was going to get tax benefits that we talked about for all this time. And you and I vehemently disagree on who won the negotiation, right? Like, I mean, to me, the Ravens at the end caved a little bit, and Lamar caved a little bit, and they're going to go play football now. Can they win? But for other franchises to watch these awful franchises draft their quarterback or their next guy or Carolina, where these teams are going to be. For the Ravens to bring themselves back into relevancy in one 24-hour period for this year, not 24-hour period. I mean, I would start with Odell Beckham. The last 2 weeks where the thing was sliding in the wrong direction, that they have now pulled it back even on day two of the draft, where the wide receiver room stacked, the quarterback signed, the linebackers in. I mean, there were thoughts they were going to deal Patrick Queen. There are thoughts that they were going to deal for DeAndre Hopkins. There was all sorts of things that happened. Now that it's settled out, at least for one day, and there'll be some more picks this weekend, a lot of that drama is gone as to what they were doing. If you would have told me on January 10th that on the second day of the draft, Lamar would be signed, they would have Odell Beckham, they would draft a kid that they apparently wanted. Maybe they wanted the other kid from Ohio State more. You know, yeah, I don't know which of those wide receivers when there was the run in the middle of the draft, but it was a very interesting, entertaining first night of the draft. And there's got to be a little part of you in the WWE that just loves that the NFL has completely stolen Vince McMahon's act, huh?
right down to Roger Goodell. Even with, you know, they'll put him with Make-A-Wish kids or you know,
anything they can do to shield him before the draft begins with three murdered kids' families from Virginia and stand there smiling. And I'm thinking, dude, this is gross. I'm watching this on TV. These people's kids been murdered. And you're sitting there taking photo ops like he just got drafted by the Ravens. It made me want to vomit. I didn't like it. And the league does a lot of things I don't love. But, boy, draft night has become something like, do you want it in Baltimore? Yeah, but if I went down there, what the hell would I do? Woo! J-E-T-S, you suck! I mean, I don't, like, the whole thing, and it doesn't look like a lot of people came in Kansas City the way they did in Philadelphia. It didn't look like 250,000 people showing up for it. But the draft night has become this carny act. I mean, it's insane. Hey, Whitney used to, I want to dance with some. Oh, stop, Eric. Hold on. We got to pick a football player. I mean, like, the whole thing is just, it's weird, dude. I mean, being as a guy that sat on the Felt Forum floor when they drafted John Ogden and Ray Lewis, it's just a little weird.
Yeah. Oh, it's no question. I mean, or think back to when it used to be on a Tuesday morning and, you know, ESPN would televise it, but no one would talk about it. I mean, it'd be something you'd read about in the paper the next day.
Can you imagine Adley Rutschman 3 years ago getting drafted and coming out and having a doorman and having to put on the hat and
it's something
do all that and then walk out and do this wrestling? I mean, you know, Adley Rutschman, they took that from him. You know, they should do that for the baseball players, right? I mean, it's insane what they did on Thursday night.
And in fairness, I mean, the MLB draft has a little more pomp and circumstance than it used to. The difference is there. No one watches far fewer people watch college baseball than college football. So it kind of lends itself because, hey, college football rolls right into the draft. You knew these guys. You watched them at Ohio State or Alabama or Florida or wherever. But, yeah, it's a spectacle. And the point I was making about Goodell is no matter what they try to do, he gets booed regardless. And that's where it's like Vince McMahon, right? He's full-blown
heel. Well, now
the
guys are picking him up and dragging him around, right? Like, that's the new thing. You get one chance to pick him up and throw him around like a rag doll, and you do it.
The bro hugs with Goodell, I mean, that's been a thing for a long time now, but it's still weird to me. I don't know, but it's a spectacle. And, you know, I mean, it was an interesting first night of the draft. I think one of the things that had been talked about a lot, I mean, beyond the quarterbacks, and obviously we saw Will Levis slide down the board. You know, there had been some reports that he could go first overall, which I was never buying that, but certainly was surprised to see him not going, you know, the top half of the first round, let's say. But I think one thing that had been talked about a lot, and I thought this played out, was there was a lot of volatility in terms of just how good the class was, how many bona fide slam dunk first round grades there were, and the idea and the potential for there to be some surprises. And we saw that. I mean, how about the fact that you had two running backs go off the board before a wide receiver went off the board? I mean, how many times has that happened in recent draft memory? I mean, that's just something you don't see. And look, I get it. Bijan Robinson out of Texas is considered a special talent at the running back position, but positional value is something you've heard me talk about a lot, you know, as far as, you know, kind of nerding it up from a football analytics standpoint. But to see him and then Gibbs, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama go off the board 12th to Detroit, you know, that was surprising. You know, you see some names that had been thought of as maybe a top 10 pick, and, you know, they're still hanging around 10, 15, 20 picks later. And then some other names that were thought to be, hey, maybe that's an early second round guy, and suddenly they're out there. You know, they're already off the board. So, you know, there's always that to some extent. But I think what you saw with this draft was, I think there was, you know, a little more variance maybe in terms of how these players were drafted. And I think, you know, even going back to the Ravens with Zay Flowers, I mean, Eric DaCosta said after round one that, you know, they got some calls. They had some opportunities that they could have moved back. And I think it was interesting when you looked at the Ravens, considering Deontay Banks out of Maryland, who ultimately went to the Giants, but he was there. And obviously the Ravens still have some need at corner. And we'll talk about that as we get later into the draft. But you had him, you had Joey Porter Jr., who, you know, I thought might be a top 10 or 12 pick. And, well, clearly I was dead wrong about that. So, but the point was they had some opportunities to move back, and they could have. And, you know, but Eric, you know, said that we like Zay Flowers too much to, you know, for the draft capital we were getting in return to move back, we didn't really think it was worth it. So, you know, I said all along, if the Ravens were going to move back, they had to have teams that were eager and willing to come up. And that's always part of the equation. And according to them, they had a chance, but ultimately they decided to stay put. But, you know, the draft, it's, you know, it's fun. And I do have to laugh because you mentioned the draft spectacle. We were even joking about this in the media room in Owings Mills, that you look at the pundits and every single pick they love, right? Every single prospect they love. And I get it. You don't want to be the guy that's a complete downer over someone's career, right? You don't want to
be Bill Polian on draft.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be, you know, say about a 21 or 22 year old who's fulfilling his dream. And you don't want to be the guy saying, oh, that's an awful pick. Even if you're thinking that,
even if you're thinking that's an awful suit.
Well, sure. There's some of that too, but you know, there's just a lot of unknown. And it is funny because, you know, not that I do this, but if you wanted to, you know, you record the draft and then play it back a year later, 2 years later, and you hear some of the things said and you see how excited some of the teams are and you say, wow, if only they had known
you
how that was
going to
play
Rosen,
out.
Didn't you?
I famously have said this, not Josh Rosen. I have famously said, and look, I was a 14-year-old know-nothing, and now I'm just a 39-year-old know-nothing, but I liked Ryan Leaf better than Peyton Manning. I'm the one guy that will actually admit it, even though there were plenty of people.
Didn't you admit that to Ryan Leaf once?
I think I did. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what makes this fun. I mean, if everyone thought the same way about it, it'd be boring, right? So, yeah, you're going to have some picks that are end up going to be terrible. And then you're going to have other picks like, hey, how about the Baltimore Ravens move back to 32 to draft Lamar Jackson 5 years ago? I'd say that worked out pretty well from a value standpoint. That worked out a little better than Josh Rosen, as you mentioned, or Baker Mayfield. So, you know, I mean, it's fun. It's fun. And I mean, it's something that has become, you know, you mentioned the spectacle. For me, I can remember being in college and I would buy a draft guide and I'd know all the prospects. And this was long before I was doing it for a living or anything. I do feel that draft coverage has gotten to the point where it jumped the shark when everyone and their grandma was starting to publish a mock draft. But it's a big industry and it's a big conversation piece and it's fun and people like talking about it and they're debating this weekend. They'll continue to debate. We'll laugh at draft grades that are given 2 days after the draft ends or 2 hours after the draft ends. But, you know,
well, the Texans won the draft. I mean, obviously they picked second and third.
Well,
right?
I would say, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, they get Jalen Carter 9th overall. And, you know, at the end of the first round, you know, they get Nolan Smith. You know, I mean, they get two Georgia guys, which they had already, you know, they're already collecting Georgia guys before Thursday night. But, you know, you look at the Eagles, you say the rich get richer and Howie Roseman. And by the way, one thing I'd want to mention, even though Eric downplayed it, Eric should be buying Howie Roseman a very fine bottle of wine for getting the deal done with Jalen Hurts, which I still think is a major reason why they got so much traction, gained so much traction with Lamar here and got something done. But, you know, you look at the Eagles, you know, what they were able to do. You mentioned the Texans. I mean, boy, they were big players. We'll see how it turns out for them. but they were aggressive, super aggressive. So, it's fun. And some of the teams right now that we're poking holes at, with what they did or making fun of, time will tell whether they were truly dumb or maybe they're smart. So, it's fun. I try not to make too much of it. And, every year we do this and, the Ravens are one of those teams that every year is praised. It's effusive praise that they receive on a yearly basis. And some of those draft classes prove to be legitimate in that way. And we can look at others and say, that wasn't quite as good as people thought on draft night. So it makes it fun. These are still human beings at the end of the day. It's still more art than we like it to think, even though we try to make it science.
Well, last week I went to Hawaii and I snuck out, didn't tell anybody we were going. And we went to the same hotel we went to 4 years ago. And I know you know this story because you saw the picture. But 4 years ago, we checked into a hotel in Maui, went down to the pool. I walked into the pool, I looked in the pool, and Kyle Bowler was in the pool with his wife and family. And I wound up spending 3 days with Kyle Bowler on my Hawaiian vacation because everywhere we went, we ran into him and his family at dinner and like around. So we went back last week and we checked into the hotel. And the first thing my wife is like, you should send a picture to Bowler and just say, where are you? Where the hell are you today? And I thought, well, those are draft mistakes from, 15, 20 years ago, 20 years ago now, 03, right? So we go back to all those years. And I remember sitting in Padonia Station when the bird changed and the Terrell Suggs and the, you remember these draft nights forever. And obviously Thursday with the Lamar Jackson signing and the Zay Flowers situation, this has been, the Ravens have had a rough off season, I guess, in the media and with the fan base and whatever, but they're ready to play football. And we'll be ready to watch the draft all weekend long. Good news is Kyle Bowler's not playing football for the Ravens this year. Lamar Jackson getting all the money and all the glory and a lot of guaranteed money, but not all the guaranteed money. Luke's at Owings Mills. He'll be monitoring Oriole baseball as they're on the road in Detroit all weekend. We're going to be here all weekend as well, doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. First to Captain Larry's on Thursday, Faithley's on Friday. Next Thursday, we are at McFall's Oyster and Reel, or Reel and Oyster, Oyster and Reel, I believe it is, in Middle River. The old Sioux Island will be down there on Thursday, giving away Maryland scratch-offs in the instant lottery. A throwback to the lottery's first ever scratch-off. We had a bunch of winners on Thursday at Captain Larry's. You can always find Luke at Baltimore Luke. You can find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking NFL draft, Oriole baseball, and Baltimore Positive.